On this 30th day of August 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 3, Karma Yoga, and we're going to repeat text 42, which we didn't get a chance to explore yesterday so much. 342. Indriyani paranyahu
Indriyani paranyahu
Indriyebhyak parang manaha
Indriyebhyak parang manaha
Manasastu parabuddhir
Manasastu parabuddhir
Yo buddhe paratastu saha
Yo buddhe paratastu saha.
Translation: the working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. Purport. The senses are different outlets for the activities of lust. Lust is reserved within the body, but it is given vent through the senses. Therefore, the senses are superior to the body as a whole. These outlets are not in use when there is superior consciousness or Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, the soul makes direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the hierarchy of bodily functions, as described here, ultimately ends in the Supreme Soul. Bodily action means the functions of the senses, and stopping the senses means stopping all bodily actions. But since the mind is active, then even though the body may be silent and at rest, the mind will act, as it does during dreaming. But above the mind is the determination of the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul proper. If, therefore, the soul is directly engaged with the Supreme, naturally all other subordinates, namely the intelligence, mind, and senses, will be automatically engaged. In the Katha Upanishad, there is a similar passage in which it is said that the objects of sense gratification are superior to the senses, and mind is superior to the sense objects. If, therefore, the mind is directly engaged in the service of the Lord constantly, then there is no chance that the senses will become engaged in other ways. This mental attitude has already been explained, param drishtva nivartate. If the mind is engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is no chance of its being engaged in the lower propensities. In the Katha Upanishad, the soul has been described as Mahan, the great. Therefore, the soul is above all, namely the sense objects, the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. Therefore, directly understanding the constitutional position of the soul is the solution of the whole problem. With intelligence, one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul and then engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. That solves the whole problem. A neophyte spiritualist is generally advised to keep aloof from the objects of the senses. But aside from that, one has to strengthen the mind by use of intelligence. If by intelligence one engages one's mind in Krishna consciousness, by complete surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically the mind becomes stronger. And even though the senses are very strong, like serpents, they will be no more effective than serpents with broken fangs. But even though the soul is the master of intelligence and mind, and the senses also, still, unless it is strengthened by association with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, there is every chance of falling down due to the agitated mind. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanandana Shalakya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So, there is a hierarchy being set up here. And the question was raised yesterday, why the ahankar is left out. And actually, the ahankar means false ego, the false sense of self. But we see that that false sense of self is simply can be reformed by purifying the intelligence. Now, that sense of self is just who you think you are. And as you identify yourself, you will act. You will use your senses, you will use your mind and your intelligence. But in order to break free from the false ego, from the false sense of self, one needs to hear, one needs to expose oneself to this philosophy. That means the use of the intelligence. That's why the intelligence is being emphasized here, as it will in the next verse. So this is what we're doing. When we're studying the Bhagavad Gita, when we're reading Srila Prabhupada's purports, when we're thinking about them, and then understanding that our whole sense of who we are up to this point has been illusory. And working in that illusory identity, which is called the false ego, is the very source or very root of our bondage in this world and the bondage of suffering. It's explained in great detail in the third canto how this false ego, false sense of self, is the root of the whole creation, really. The false sense of self in contact with the different modes of nature produces the conditioned mind, the material mind, the material intelligence, the material senses, and all of the sensations that the senses experience. All of that is simply a production, or a result, rather, of this false sense of self. The sense that I am not the servant of Krishna. I am the servant of myself. I am the servant of my... I am separate from Krishna. So that's what needs to be reformed. It's very difficult, because when the soul comes in contact with this material world, then immediately that sense of pleasure that we have experienced in serving Krishna turns into sense gratification. The soul is by nature a pleasure-seeking being. Even you see the little animals or the insects, they're searching after that food, you know, and they're searching after the mate. And they're, you know, and then the other side of it, trying to protect, you know. And whatever body you happen to be in, you identify with it. Right? The same soul, which is more brilliant than the sun, which is the Mahan, the great, has been degraded down to the dogs and the cats and the insects and the amoebas. You know? And it's really a tragic situation. Well, how has it happened? By a progressive covering up of the consciousness, as described here, by material sense gratification, by lust. So somehow or other, coming in contact with this knowledge. Now, just being in the material world doesn't lead to wisdom. You know, yeah, we're gonna get the experience of frustration trying to enjoy here. We're gonna get the experience that comes from leading a life of the senses and having it be at the end completely depressing and frustrating. And have a sense of complete loss, you know. As Krishna says right in the Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, third chapter, Agayur Indriyaramo Mogang Parta Sajivati. If someone doesn't take up this process of sacrifice that's been mentioned in this chapter, which means instead of trying to enjoy those fruits, which is natural in the state of false ego, one gives them over for a higher purpose. One is breaking down that sense of egotism, of self-centeredness, which is our disease. If one doesn't follow the prescribed sacrifices and leads simply a life of sense gratification, then it is a sinful life uselessly spent. That's Krishna's declaration. Agayur Indriyaramo Mogang Parta Sajivati. Agayur means a life of sin. Indriyaramo means of sense gratification. Mogam means useless. Parta Sajivati. Oh, he lives Jivati uselessly, oh Parta, oh Arjuna. So this is the stark reality. So how does it happen? This is explained here in this lust section. So let's look at this hierarchy. So it's explained here in the verse that the senses are superior to dull matter. We can see that. We can move things around. We can decide what we want to see, what we want to hear, what we want to taste. Right? So the senses, in that sense, they're superior to dull matter. But the mind, sometimes called the sixth sense, directs the senses, right? Look over there. This is pleasurable. That's very nice to see. Who cares? Let's look over here, you see? You know? Let's taste that. You know? The stimuli are coming in. Something smells very nice, you know? You're hungry. Okay, so you smell something. Oh, let's go over there. You know? Well, the intelligence department says, wait a minute. I know where there's a nice restaurant. And you have to figure all the things to go, you know? how to get down there, you know. And before that, you plan it ahead. I make so much money. I have to buy this, do this. This is all the senses and the mind and the intelligence. They're kind of in a hierarchy. The intelligence is meant to decide on more than just sensation of the activities in the mind and the senses. Just like, you know, in any civilized society, there's a system of education. Now, any child, when you first go to school, you know, is generally not spontaneously attracted to go there, study, you know, and homework and all these things. You just want to play, right? You're attracted to play and do all this sort of thing. But your parents know. Your parents act as a higher intelligence. No, you have to go to school, you know. They force you, you know. And then there's all kind of peer pressure and everything. And after a while, you understand, okay, it's good for me to go to school. Otherwise, I'm going to suffer, you know, like crazy later on in life. And so there's a whole system of education. They don't really know what to study properly for their ultimate good. But that idea that the intelligence must be developed for the furtherance of a good life in this world is there in any society. So the intelligence department. So the key is this intelligence, Pratibuddhi here. Now the soul is even superior to the intelligence. But the soul in the ordinary conditioned state is more or less being controlled by the lower self. And that's very graphically shown in that that famous painting or that analogy of the soul in the chariot on the mountain road. You know, just visualize, you know, you can see. So you got there's five horses pulling this chariot. Each one represents a different sense. The reins are the mind. The driver is the intelligence. And the passenger is the soul, and this chariot is the body as a whole. Okay, so what's going on? These horses are out of control. You're trying to rein them in, but they're out of control. Means that they're being attracted to the different sense objects, right? And the mind is listening to that siren call and is simply responding and directing the senses here and there to try to enjoy, here and there and try to enjoy. And the intelligence can't control them either. The intelligence has been brought under the sway of sensation, of sense gratification. Because the intelligence can also simply be used for figuring out different ways to enjoy. Or different ways to make money so that you can enjoy. Right? All of these guys who make millions and billions of dollars, you read about all the time, you know, they have the karma to do it, they have the intelligence to do it, to manipulate things so that they can make so much money, way more than they need, right? Or just the average person, you know. Well, you have to have some kind of skill, you have to have some kind of thing. Well, this is all the intelligence, so that you can sell your labor and make money and like that. But there's no, the real use of the intelligence for the ultimate liberation of the soul from bondage and return to the spiritual world, that's completely unknown. So where does that intelligence come from? Now, above the intelligence and the soul, you have the super soul. It's explained elsewhere that overseeing this whole operation of the intelligence, mind, senses, sense objects, and how everything is working is the super soul. In every atom, in every heart, there's an expansion of Krishna. You see? So without getting that intelligence, as he says, sarva sachaha mani sannivisto matak smriti agyanama bohanansha, that in the 15th chapter, 15th verse, says, in every heart, O Arjuna, I am sitting there. Sarva sachaham riddhi sannivishto. And from me are coming the knowledge, the forgetfulness, the remembrance of what to do, of how to work. Suppose you woke up in the morning, you had no idea who you were, where you're supposed to go, what you're supposed to do. Can you imagine? How important is remembrance from day to day? Right? That's coming from the super soul. So he's overseeing everything, but he's not directly intervening in our life in the sense of he's trying to direct us from internal, but we are so covered over we can't hear. But you know that process of the conscience, you know how people feel guilty, you know, guilty conscience. It's either as a deterrent to prevent you from doing something you know is wrong, or after you do it wrong, it makes you feel bad. That's the soul, the super soul. Making you feel it. Then you have people who keep doing evil thing, bad thing, till they don't feel anything anymore. They've so covered their heart so hard, they don't even have that little hint from the super soul. They're headed down very fast, lower species, you know, hellish punishment. So Krishna consciousness is just the opposite. In order to have this hierarchy work properly for our own ultimate benefit, we have to take instruction from that super soul. We have to be directed for our ultimate good and how to use the mind, how to use the intelligence, how to use the senses. That direction is coming not from inside, which we can't hear right now, but from outside in the form of books like Bhagavad Gita and the spiritual master and sadhus who know the science and live the science. That's the only way, that through that source of the higher knowledge, the only way that we can strengthen the intelligence so that we can begin to control the lower self. And you can see what happens. Why are we sitting here and so many others are not, you know? Because somehow or other, by our good fortune or previous good activity or just the mercy of devotees, we got the idea to come into the association of devotees to read a book and to chant the holy name. It has to come to that point of practice. Once the holy name begins to be chanted, then Krishna takes over directly. A lot of purification takes place very quickly. So that the very idea of devotional service, of service to God and you know, not to the senses, becomes meaningful to us. But the key is, you see, that there's some contact through the book, through the sound, through a devotee, through sangha, by giving purifying our intelligence enough. Not all at once. There's still so many ideas, so many feelings, so many impulses that we have against our best interest. But this begins the process of turning everything right again. So as Prabhupada says in the previous purport, that lust is the perverted love of Godhead, and once it becomes perverted, it's very difficult to purify it again. But even a late beginner can do so if Krishna consciousness is so powerful that even a late beginner can become a lover of God by following the regulative principles of devotional service. And that's the key, as was emphasized this morning. You have to come to the point where that following is practically second nature to you. Where, you know, you just don't feel right unless you come to Mangal Arati and you chant your rounds. And attend the class. That's the foundation of it. The mind is very powerful. We learn that throughout the Bhagavad Gita and by our own experience. And if we let ourselves go, we don't get this protection of the internal energy by the morning program, good rounds, chanting, good association, hearing, then very quickly that mind can take you right out of here. It can just, you know, take you off into a million different directions. This is with great effort, Srila Prabhupada set up this whole institution and is being sustained by those who are following these principles carefully. So it can be done. And the key element here is the chanting of the holy name. That's the only thing that's keeping us going day to day, guaranteed. It's the chanting of the japa and the kirtan that allows us to control, even to some degree, you know, this mad mind and the intelligence. And perfecting that chanting, improving the quality of the chanting through giving up the offenses and following the principles, regular principles which we'll discuss, that is the real path of purification, the strong purification. And so one other thing, I want to share with you a couple of verses here. The regular principles of devotional service. So that came up in the last chapter. There's some very nice section near the end where Krishna is talking about steady intelligence. We're talking about the intelligence here, buddhi. You'll see in the next verse. How to get that steady intelligence where you're determined over time to become regulated. So he gives several verses. And then he has this, and Prabhupada mentions in this purport, vishayav nivartante param drishtva nivartate. This is a key verse. Is that the vishayas, we're talking about the sense object, this is sense gratification. If you don't consume niraharasya, ahara means to eat, if you don't consume the sense objects, in other words, if you're able to stop the mad process of consuming objects of the senses, then those sense objects, they'll turn away from you. Means that you'll become a little detached. You know, just like someone who, if you fast, you know, if you fast for a couple of days, you would think you're starved, but after a couple of days, you don't feel hungry. You know, the body kind of, then after many, you know, some more days, then you feel very hungry. But there's a kind of point at which everything kind of shuts down, you know, the whole digestive thing and everything, and you're not eating anymore. You know, you may be a little weak and everything, but you're not famished. I've done it. But still, deep inside, that desire is there, you know. And I'm telling you, as soon as you take the first bite of prasadam, you're more hungry than you ever were before, you know. That's exactly what Krishna says. That Vishyavanivartan nidaharasa dehina rasa varjam. You may give up the object of the senses. And if you do so, you don't see it, you don't hear about it, you don't smell it. Okay, then you're out of sight, out of mind, right? But that doesn't mean the desire deep in the heart is gone. If you get the right contact, right, association, that desire floods into your mind again. Think of the drug addicts. I've never been, thank God, a heavy-duty drug addict. But I know from, you know, just experience and hearing and reading in this world that someone who takes up the heroin, you know, practically for the rest of their life, you know, you have to watch out. If you get back, if you're able to kick it, by, you know, but if you get in the right association again, then you'll be tempted and boom, you're back where you were. Or alcohol, so common. I'm on the wagon. You know, one drink, boom, you're finished. So the desire is still there, but it's under control. So in this verse, Krishna says, the last line, padam drishtva nivartate. Padam drishtva is what means is seeing the Supreme. But the understanding is experiencing Krishna. You know, if you're always experiencing Krishna, then you're fully satisfied, the very desire goes. There's no desire anymore. And it's explained in that chapter. You know, this amazing king. So many amazing personalities. Yadivadi mamacheta krishna pada ravinde navanavarasabdhaman yudditam rantamasi. Tadabati badanadi sangame smayamani bhavati mukavikaro sushtinishtivanamcha. This is Yamunacharya, a great king. Now, the kings have all facility for sense gratification. Now, what he says, but he had become a great devotee, and he's saying here that ever since I've been tasting ever new pleasure in the rasa and the relationship of serving the lotus feet of Krishna, since that time, whenever the very idea or you know, thought or remembrance comes up of sex life with a woman, I spit at it. He doesn't have a taste anymore. Just like I think some of us, I know myself, you know, the very idea of eating meat is very distasteful. You know, well, thank God, I live across the street from McDonald's, but the wind always blows the other way. You know, I'm closer to the beach, so the sea breeze is blowing it away. But even if, you know, sometimes you get a whiff of that. Where in previous times, you know, before you know anything about Krishna consciousness, oh, that tastes good, let's go have, you know. Right? So that's proof. You get the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, Krishna prasadam, and you give up the lower taste. So that's exactly what's being explained here. Now, another verse Prabhupada quotes here, he's quoting, is Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, and he is a special avatar, you know, the specially merciful avatar, who's just giving out love of God. He doesn't even demand surrender. Now, all of us know that surrender is necessary, but he's, you know, saying, just chant, you know, Krishna prema padayate. So, what this at the end of this purport we just read, there's this analogy of the serpents, who have their teeth removed. So let's go over that, because Prabhupada is referring to a verse you may not know. So this verse is written by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Prabodhananda Saraswati was the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. When Lord Chaitanya was on a South Indian tour, he came to, I think it was Sri Rangam, which is this huge ancient temple complex there. And the Sri Vaishnavs are there. Sri Vaishnavs are those who worship Lakshmi Narayan. And the most famous would be Ramanujacharya, Sri Ramanujacharya. So they were all in that line. Very nice, very Pukka Brahmins, you know. And when these sannyasis, they travel, and then when the rainy season comes, they can't travel. It's too rainy, too muddy, and impossible to go anywhere. So they stay in one spot. And they look for, you know, a nice, pure Brahmin, Vaishnav house to stay in. And Lord Chaitanya picked this house. the house of Venkatabhat, who was the brother of Prabodhananda Saraswati, the father of Gopalbhata, who was then a child, maybe 10 years old, something like that, you know. So Lord Chaitanya, you can imagine, you know, Lord Chaitanya staying in your home for like 3 months, or 3 months, you know, 4 months of the rain, 4 months of the rainy season. So at that time, they all, of course, became Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya, you know, convinced them that Radha Krishna worship is the greatest thing. And Prabodhananda Saraswati, he's Saraswati, means very learned poet. He was also a great singer, I understand, artist. So he later went to Vrindavan and wrote some very wonderful books, some of them about Lord Chaitanya, one of which is the Chaitanya Chandramrita. And in that Chaitanya Chandramrita, which I recorded once about 25 years ago, you'll find this verse. So what the verse says is, Kaivalyam Nadakayati Tidrashapur Akasha Pushpayati Durdantinduya Kala Sarva Patali Prodkata Dangstrayati Vishvam Purna Sukhayati Vidimahindra Jishtakitayati Itkarunya Kataksha Vaibhavavatam Tam Golam Evastama. I praise Lord Chaitanya, the golden avatar, the moon of Lord Chaitanya. One who is empowered by his merciful sidelong glance. Vaibhavavatam means that you become infused with spiritual energy. Then here's the result. Kaivalyam Narakayate. Now we discussed what the word Naraka means. Does anyone remember? We were discussing that this morning. Are you? Naraka.
Naraka is like a demon.
Narakasura, yeah. But Naraka is hell. Naraka is hell. Yeah. You remember? Trivadhang Narakasya Dham Dwaram Nashanam Avana. In the 16th chapter, it describes that there are three gates leading to hell. Remember what they are?
Lust.
Yeah.
Anger.
Yeah. And?
Greed.
Okay. So here he's saying, Kaivalyam Narakayate, that this impersonal, merging into the impersonal Brahman. How many here want to merge into the impersonal Brahman? Raise your hand. See? Just a few days, already you're cured of that disease. But millions of people do. Because what it means is no more birth, no more death. Oh, thank God, I'm free. You know? That's the motive. It's actually motivated by fear. So, this desire to just become impersonal liberation. So here he's saying, Kaivalyam, which is a word that means oneness, you know, is like hell. Why is it like hell? Because for a devotee, there has to be three things. Three things. The Lord, the devotee, and the process of devotion. As soon as you merge into the body of the Lord or the effulgence of the Lord, you've lost your identity. No more senses, no more mind, just consciousness. I am that I am, that I am, that I am. Can you chant that mantra for a million years? Can't even chant it for 1 minute. But that's the whole thing. I exist. Big deal. You know. But at least I'm not, I don't have birth and death, you see. So for a devotee, that's hellish. And then it's Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate. So Tridashapur refers to the Tridasha means 30, but it can also mean 30 million. It's said that there's 30 million planets of the Devas. Most of them are not so famous, obviously. We wouldn't know about them. We know Chandraloka, Indraloka, all those lokas. But there's higher planes of existence that we can't imagine, you know, where you live longer, you have, you know, much more facility for sense gratification. So here's Akasha Pushpa. You know what an Akasha Pushpa means?
Akasha is the sky.
And Pushpa?
Sky flower.
So is anyone interested in the sky flower? It doesn't exist. The point is, it's imaginary. You know? In other words, all of these heavenly planets, who cares? It's an imagination. I'm not even interested. That's the whole point of this verse. One who is empowered by Lord Chaitanya's merciful sidelong glance, we should aspire for that, has these things. And the next line deals with these senses. Now, we're back home now talking about the senses, right? That's what all this is about. Indriyani 42 begins with the senses. So that's what karma has to do, the senses. That's where we live, what we do. So he says, these senses, how does it go? Kaivalyam Tridashapur Akasha Pushpayate Durdantendriya. Now, indriya is the senses, okay? Danta means to control. One who is who can control the senses is called someone. Danta is a word, but Durdanta means difficult. The difficult to control senses, Durdandendriya, which are like Kala Sarpa, poisonous serpents. Bilba Mangal Thakur knew that. His eyes were taking him, you know, he already knew about Krishna. He's on his way to Vrindavan, and he sees a beautiful woman, and he can't go, he can't go after the beautiful woman. This is Bilba Mangal, before he became Bilba Mangal, ultimately. And he was so upset with his eyes that he plucked them out. This is, in our, you know, this is way before Lord Chaitanya. Then he wrote Krishna Karnamrita and everything, you know. But that's not our meaning. We don't have to do that. But that's how much he felt like that. The ears are taking us to the cinema songs, you know, the pop music. The tongue will take you to hell. Just go down to McDonald's, you know. We could do it any moment. Right? So these senses are difficult to control, and they're like poison that bite you. They'll, you know. But if you pull out the fangs from the cobra, he may look like poisonous, but he can't hurt you. Right? You laugh at him. So that's the point, is that if you get blessed by Lord Chaitanya, then you get to the point of spontaneous devotion. And these senses, it looks like we have the same senses as everybody else, but they can't hurt us. They're spontaneously attracted to serve Krishna. You want to see not some beautiful woman, but the beautiful deities. There's a nice verse in this Pajavali. I got to memorize this one. It says, just like, you know, a lover separated from his beloved woman, you know, a girlfriend, reads that letter, you know, that from, you know, reads it over and over again before there was email, you know, you're waiting, there's a letter came, you know. You look at the letter, open it up, serve it, read it out loud, you know. Or as a newlywed husband, you know, sees the beautiful form of his bride, right? Or as, I think he even says kissing. You know, taste that. And the same way, I want to read again and again and hear it again and again, your holy name, O Lord, and the descriptions of you. I want to see your beautiful form of the deity. I want to taste the wonderful varieties of taste of prasadam. You see? The same senses are not biting you, rather they're taking you back to Godhead. So that's the Durdandendriya Kala Sarvapatali Prakata Dangstrayate. And then Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. The whole world appears full of happiness. At every moment, you're seeing the leela of your Lord, of your beloved Lord. This is how Lord Chaitanya, I was just reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's traveling to Vrindavan. Or any time, he'd see a cloud, and he'd think, oh, that's Krishna, you know, the color. See any river, oh, it's the Yamuna. You know, and immediately he would remember, everything is a cause for remembrance of Krishna. So for the devotee, it's like when we, you know, go on Harinam, we get a little taste of that. If you're in the right mood, you're really absorbed in Harinam. So it's like a dancing arena for us, Fifth Avenue. You know, we're seeing it. You know, and the people, it's sad in one, you know, sense they don't know about Krishna, but they're responding. We know they're getting some mercy. They got to hear the holy name. You know, except for the unfortunate few, you know, like this, where they got their iPods in or something like that. But basically, they're all here now. So the whole world is a stage for the devotees. And you're seeing Krishna's Leela, Lord Chaitanya's Leela being enacted. So that's Vishram Purna Sukhayate. And then Vidhi Mahindradishtakitayate. This is vintage Prabodhananda. Saraswati Thakur. He's saying that the great demigod, such as Vidhi, you know who Vidhi is? Who can guess? Vidhi is Brahma. He knows all the rules. He knows all the Vedas. Vedas, Vidhi. You know. Vidhi means Guru. And Mahendra, that's Mahendra. Vidhi, Mahendra, Adis, etc. They're all no more significant to you than insects. In other words, you honor them, but you don't worship them for anything. You know? This is the result of getting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which we should try it again. So that was Prabhupada's referring to that verse here at the end of this purport. So, just to come, we'll end here on this verse, and that is that our salvation is staying in touch with the Super Soul. Means that as much as possible, at every moment, or as often as we can, we should align our activities and our words and our thoughts and everything with what we know the super soul wants us to do. Well, how do we know? You got to read the book. You got to hear the words of the spiritual master or his representatives. And then if we're doing that, gradually we'll feel the chains, the shackles of the obsession for sense gratification loosening. Maya will release us. You'll feel free from the desires for sense gratification. And then you know that, you know, and proportionally for desires to serve Krishna. It's one or the other. Any questions on 42? Yes, Prabhu.
Not so much a question, but a light comment. You were saying how devotees, they can use the same senses and the same facilities and like that. Uh-huh. And not this last time, you know, because we were out of town, but the one before that, a lot of people, they're afraid of like technology. Oh, technology is a big distraction. But we were doing Harinam, and we were coming around the corner, and there was one of those iPads with uh-huh. FaceTime where there was a person who was on the iPad and they were watching the Harinam.
Oh, really?
Listen out.
Yeah, the technology is an expansion of the senses, you know, and it can get you more and more entangled, or it can actually be a real agent for, you know, liberation. I mean, there's people all over this country who are attending Mangalartik, going to class, but they're just sitting at home in Oshkosh, you know, hundreds of miles from any temple, going on every day with the internet. You know, you can say.
Thanks for a wonderful class.
Hare Krishna, Goli Prabhupada.
I was just remembering that in the seventh chapter, Krishna says that he's the intelligence of the intelligent. Mm. And I had sometimes when I read that chapter, I'm like, well, Krishna's just saying he's everything, basically. But the way you explain 15:15, it really validifies how he's the intelligence of the intelligent, because as Prabhupada says in the purport, one can't do anything without intelligence.
Right.
And you can see how that makes sense from what you said with, like, if you can't remember anything, and how are you going to be able to...
You can't speak.
Yeah.
You know, nothing.
Yeah. And it really elucidates another portion of the Bhagavad Gita where it's mentioning, I don't know if it's in the purport or in a class that Prabhupada gave, but he sort of defines intelligence as being the ability to discriminate.
Yeah, for sure.
And you could see how, based on that person in your heart providing you with that knowledge and that remembrance, is going to be that, I mean, how can you discriminate if you don't know two things?
Right, right.
So
it really is, you know, there's this name that we kind of recoil from, Vivekananda, you know, but Viveka is that power of discrimination. Now, on what basis do you discriminate? That, you know, that the intelligence is what is that power of discrimination. But what is the base at which you discriminate? Just like a devotee, what to do and what not to do. I mean, that's the most important discrimination, going here or going here. Now, you need some pramana. You need some source of evidence or basis by which you can discriminate. And for most people, it's their own, you know, experience, what they read in some book. You know, they just put it all together, you know. But it's not an absolute source of pramana. In other words, you're misled. Everyone has to have some intelligence, otherwise, you know, you can't be lower animals. So that, but that pramana, that basis of how you discriminate, what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong, what to do and what not to do, that has to be the shastra. That's the important. Everything is resting on this scripture here, and that came out. We were given this class after the class this morning on the end of the 16th chapter. You know, it's very stark, that 16th chapter. Here's the result. Okay, you want to know what happens if you just let the senses run riot? This is it. You become a demon, you know, called the asura, you know. And asha, pasha, shatai, buddha, you're bound by thousands and thousands of desires. You think that the only purpose in life is to fulfill, and up to the end of life, is to fulfill the senses, you know. And ultimately, you're cast down and down and down. So at the end, he gives these four verses, which are very pertinent. You know, which I can go over again. You know, they're really good to know. So, okay, I don't want to go to hell. You know, it doesn't sound very good. Well, the Krishna says, there's three doors leading down that way. And here they are. Tribadham, Nadakasedam, Dwaram, Nashanam, Atmanaha. Now, Nashanam, Atmanaha, the soul is destroyed. Of course, we know it can't be destroyed, but is buried for millions of years, virtually destroyed. So he says, there are three gates. And the first is, we're just talking about it, lust, anger, and greed, as we mentioned. Kama, krodas, talobas, tasmareta, trayantajit. Therefore, O Arjuna, and through Arjuna, he's speaking to all of us, give them up, avoid those. What happens then? Etaiva mukta konteya, tamo dwarais tribi nidaha, acharati atmanakshaya, toto yanti parangatim. So here's this is the graphic alternative. If you can give them up, tribhutam etaiva mukta, free of those, konteya, tamo dwarais tribi, it's kind of very graphic, isn't it? Like, just imagine this. The gates of hell, you know, steaming down air, boiling away, fire breathing, sulfur is coming up. You know, these three gates, lust, anger, and greed. Okay, we want to avoid those, right? You know, then what do? You can't just avoid them by just, like, avoiding them. You have to act. Acharatyatmanakshaya, you act for the ultimate good of the soul by following the regulative principles of freedom, you know. And then, tato yanti parangatim, you go back to Godhead. This is Krishna speaking at the end of the 16th chapter. So then come the last two verses. He all brings it home here. And he's saying, Yakshastra vidamutsrija. It comes back to the Shastra. The vidya, the instruction of the Shastra. If you give those up, then how are you going to act? Kāyate kāmakārataha. And then you continue to act on the basis of lust, your whims. Right? Continues to act on the basis of whims, then nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukam napanamgatim. No perfection, no happiness, no going back to Godhead. Therefore, tasmat, that's the last verse. Tasmat shastra pramanam te karya karya vavastato. The whole movement is based on this one line back, practically speaking. Therefore, as your evidence, as your authority for how to act and how not to act, you have to consult the Shastra. You know? As given to us by those who are following the Shastra. And then, of course, what are the Shastra? Okay, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. The essence of the whole Shastra. Everything flows from that. And one more instruction. Gyatva Shastra Badana. Knowing what the Shastra says, you can't just consult, and then, you know, then you actually have to do it. Karma Karta Miharasi. Perform, do those acts as a matter of duty. You know what I mean? This is not the point of spontaneous devotion. This is the point of where you're being pulled in all directions. And the lower, those gates are open there, you know. This, you have to do it as a matter of duty and discipline. That's what the last line said. Karya karta miharasi. That's it. And then we can escape this gate, this lust thing. And that's what the next verse is all about. With your intelligence, what do you do with your intelligence? Well, you hear. You think, you cogitate, you discriminate. And then you understand how to avoid this all-devouring enemy known as lust. You know, which is the first door leads to the other doors. It's all there. All right, we're going to do this. We're going to read this last verse and do the same thing tomorrow that we did today. Read it again and then go over the whole chapter. Text 43. Evam buddhe param buddhva.
Evam buddhe param buddhva.
Sangstabhyatmanam atmana.
Sangstabhyatmanam atmana.
Jahi shatrum mahabaho.
Jahi shatrum mahabaho.
Kamarupam durasadam.
Kamarupam durasadam.
Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus, by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Purport. This third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directive to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without considering impersonal voidness the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden, But by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind, by steady intelligence directed toward one's pure identity. This is the sum total of this chapter. In the immature stage of material existence, philosophical speculation and artificial attempts to control the senses by the so-called practice of yogic postures can never help a man toward spiritual life. He must be trained in Krishna consciousness by higher intelligence. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the third chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of karma yoga, or the discharge of one's prescribed duty in Krishna consciousness. So just a few words on this, and then we'll reiterate it tomorrow. So again, coming back to the role of the intelligence here. Knowing oneself, by the intelligence, one has to understand one is superior even to the intelligence. Evam buddhe puram buddhva. And then you can steady the thing. Sungstabhyatmanam atmana. Steady the mind. The whole key is the mind. In any yoga practice is the mind. So how do you strengthen intelligence? By what we're doing right here. Study the Shastra, hear submissively, and then try to act on that basis. The more that you act on the basis, the more Krishna from within, he gives you more intelligence. That comes out in the 10th chapter. Tesham satati yukta nam pujatam priti purvakam. Tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mama biyantate. For those who are serving me nicely, machita makata prana, by thinking of me, serving me, discussing me, I give the intelligence by which they can come to me. So that intelligence is a gift. It's a gift, and it can be given and it can be taken away. So the more that we serve sincerely in a humble state of mind, the more Krishna gives us the intelligence. It's not a question of PhDs or academic degrees. It's a good question of sincere effort to fix the mind on Krishna by chanting and hearing the holy name. That's the first service. It's always the basis of all the other services. Fixing the mind, There's one passage we're reading in the 11th canto. I think we read it already. Or maybe we'll read it soon. How when, by too much contact with the modes of passion and ignorance, you lose the ability to concentrate, then it is said that the soul is lost. So much, isn't it? AD, what is it called? Attention deficit disorder in this world. When I was a kid, it wasn't that way. Maybe they just didn't name it yet in that big book of diseases. What is it called? That? Yeah.
ADHD.
But isn't there a whole book of mental diseases they keep putting out?
The DSM.
Yeah, they add more and more, right?
Yeah,
So that they can make more money by selling the drugs to cure the disease.
Tied into the pharmaceutical.
But in any case, there is a lot of distraction going on. There's more distraction as children. After all, we were all children at one time, right? So if you lose the ability to concentrate at that point, or they give you a drug that makes it impossible to concentrate, ultimately, or whatever, you become dependent on the drug to concentrate at all. It's very difficult to do anything, even materially, what to speak of spiritually. You read the Bhagavad Gita, it's yoga, fixing the mind on Krishna, fixing it, to be really absorbed. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Those 32 syllables, it means fixing the mind, hearing them nicely, one after another. That's the essence. And if we can do that nicely, we get more. Krishna gives us more intelligence to proceed. If we can't do that, we're going to have a hard time. Any final comments before we adjourn? Yes, Prabhu.
Well, you started the class with mentioning about my question yesterday about why the Ahankar was left off. But I was reading at the end of the verse 7:10, that verse I just quoted about having the intelligence of the intelligent, that Prabhupada says that Krishna is the root of all intelligence. So it really ties in with your statement that the intelligence is sort of, the refining of it at the end is the same as the understanding of the false ego, because when you concluded the discrimination, the root of it is Krishna.
Right.
So
right.
You've already.
And you understand who you really are, no more false ego.
Yeah, that's right.
We better adjourn. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.